It's 2017. I'm James Carlton. God forbid. Hello, welcome to God Forbid. Great to have your company on our RN show and podcast, broadcasting this week from the International Mark Latham Centre for Dialogue and Mutual Respect. We are via satellite, radio wave, podcast, and if you don't mind the buffering, the National Broadband Network. And this week, something different. You've heard atheists say science has all the answers, religion's just superstition. You've heard religious people say science can't explain the metaphysical, which is beyond understanding. Well, this week you'll hear neither. Instead, on the panel, an atheist who takes religious truth claims seriously and recognises the limitations of science. And we meet a believer who uses evidence and rationality and history and reason to conclude that God exists. Louis C.K. thinks about this too, but he still hasn't made up his mind.
I don't know if there's a God. That's all I can say, honestly, is I don't know. Some people think that they know that there isn't. That's a weird thing to think you can know. Yeah, there's no God. Are you sure? Yeah, no, there's no God. How do you know? Because I didn't see him. How do you... There's a vast universe you can see for about 100 yards when there's not a building in the way. How could you possibly... Did you look everywhere? Did you look in the downstairs bathroom? Where have you looked so far? No, I didn't see him yet. I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave yet. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm waiting until it comes on cable.
Louis C.K., guest hosting NBC's Saturday Night Live. Now to our God Forbid panel. Amy Orr Ewing. She has degrees in theology from Oxford University and King's College London. She's program director at the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics and director of the Zacharias Trust, where she works with the Oxford Don John Lennox, emeritus professor of mathematics. He's the guy who's famous as a kind of anti-Richard Dawkins. He uses science and rationality and reason to make the case for Christianity. He's famous for that. Amy is too. But she's more famous for giving a Pashtun language Bible to a Taliban leader in Afghanistan. Amy, welcome to God Forbid.
Thank you. Great to be on this show.
We'll hear that extraordinary story in a sec, but I need to get to our other panellist in our Melbourne studio, James Fodor. He's graduate in physics, now researching structural biology at Monash University. He's been president of the University of Melbourne Secular Society, and he'll be speaking along with the world-famous philosopher Peter Singer at next week's Humanist Convention in Melbourne. And as you'd expect from the CV I've just described, James grew up as a Mormon. James, welcome to God Forbid.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, how does one transition from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to structural biologist and then atheist?
Well, there's no easy way to answer that question, I'm afraid. I was one of those Mormon missionaries for a while, you know, the shirt and tie and so on. And after I came back, the short answer is I did some reading and thinking and changed my mind.
Isn't it best that you do that before you go on your mission?
Well, in theory, but not necessarily in practice, at least for a Mormon, you're not necessarily encouraged to critically think about things like that.
Where was your mission work?
I went to Auckland, New Zealand. I was mostly trying to teach Mandarin-speaking students there.
How many did you convert?
Well, in terms of baptisms, which is sort of the main metric that they use, we had one.
Now, how painful was the transition for you and your family?
For me, it wasn't as bad as it is for a lot of people exiting Mormonism. My mother sort of came out around the same time as me, that is, left the church. So that made it easy. I mean, some people are sort of disowned by their entire families. My father and grandfather weren't too happy about it, but it wasn't as big a deal for me as it is for some people.
That's a relief. Did you truly believe in Mormonism?
Yes, absolutely. That's why I went to preach the gospel to people overseas, because I really believed it.
And turning away from that, was it sudden or slow?
It was a period of about 3 months or so when I was seriously questioning and praying and pondering. And at the end of that, I decided I couldn't call myself a Mormon anymore, so I left then.
Amy, to you now. You and your husband were traveling to Afghanistan on Easter break, as you do, and you'd filled your bags with Pashtun language Bibles, and you'd had a meeting with the Taliban, the leadership, in fact. What happened?
We were students of theology at Oxford University, and part of what you do on that course is study comparative religion. And I was kind of interested in Islam and this very little known group called the Taliban.
This is before 9/11.
Before 9/11, yes. You're aging me now, but yes, before 9/11. And they'd sort of come onto the world scene, and we were interested in finding out about their ideas and kind of dialoguing with them, interviewing them as to what the kind of inspiration of their specific form of of religious faith was. And en route to do that, we decided to take gifts with us, which were Bibles, and to try and share a little bit about what we believed.
I'm not aging you too much because you were very young.
This is terribly young.
How
yes.
old?
19. Yeah.
This gives rise to images of, if you don't mind me saying it, like a babe in the woods who, you know, walking into Taliban country as a teenager with a Bible. You didn't even have your hair covered.
I had my hair covered and actually had it cut short as well. At that point, as well as today, really, I was motivated by an interest in truth, what is true, and also an interest in what others believe and why they believe it.
You didn't want to find that in Auckland, like James?
yeah, that would have been interesting too, but come on.
It's a very lovely city.
These guys ended up, literally reshaping the world that we live in today. Obviously, we didn't know that at the time, but it was one of the most formative conversations of my life in one sense. And the interview material that we did there went on to form the basis of a book that we wrote called Holy Warriors, because I think a lot of people have analysed the Taliban from a sort of political point of view or even sociological. You know, they've come out of this quite poor part of Pakistan, but hadn't necessarily asked questions about their ideas and where do their ideas come from? What is it that motivates them? So it was from that kind of theological perspective that we were interested, and then also wanting to introduce them to alternative ideas that we believe are actually true and therefore relevant to them.
That's the rub.
That's the Bibles, yeah.
How did that conversation go?
We met the education minister, and the foreign minister and the religion minister. His title was the keeper of the Holy Quran. And when we gave them the Bibles, he was the one to speak, the religion minister first. And he said, I know exactly what this book is, and I've been praying for years that I could read this book. He'd never had the opportunity to read it. And he said, I'm going to read it every day. I'm interested.
Was he being unusually polite for the Taliban?
Extremely unusually polite, yeah. I mean, people were shot or, you know, executed for having a beard the wrong length or owning a television set. What struck me as a Christian is that even at the heart of an organisation like that, where someone was honestly seeking and praying and asking for the possibility of reading the Bible, that from my perspective, God would hear that prayer and send people to answer that prayer. That seems to be how he saw it too.
You didn't fear that the worst could have happened?
Yeah, we definitely feared the worst could have happened. I mean, I guess it was a combination of being young, we were 19, and having a sense that this was something that God wanted us to do. It actually was incredibly unlikely that we could have got into that situation. It was very hard to get a visa. You could say miraculous. I'm sure James might argue with that, but it was pretty unlikely to actually come to pass. And yet it did.
Any word on what's happened to that minister now?
No, we didn't follow up with them afterwards. We got out with our lives, which seems like a pretty positive outcome.
Fascinating.
For us.
Indeed. It's RN. God forbid.